Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I've never met Martin O'Neill, no. I'd love to meet him.
Martin went to the... He went to the soccer because he played against Kerry and Croke Park for the Derry Miners.
Yeah.
And hit the crossbar was a penalty to win the game. It was the last kick.
No way.
Yeah. And then not that long after he was playing, because he was an exceptional Gaelic footballer, he was playing as a very young man against Meath and was blackguarded, struck very heavily off the ball.
Yeah.
And that decided him. He said no.
He said no.
Went to the soccer then, you know. Yeah. I mean, what a career. 2 European Cups.
Unbelievable career.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. Like,
let's hear your North Derry.
When you're doing Martin O'Neill, I don't think, you know, when you're talking like him, I think it's very much like that. You know, when you're talking about managing Celtic and, you know, playing for Nottingham Forest, and it's a fantastic career.
It's not bad. Free Staters struggle badly with Derry accents. Conor Moore thinks he can do me, but...
I think Conor Moore is
just
one
a pastiche,
of
you. You know, it's a version. Bad. It's a version. You know, it's difficult. It's difficult to do that sort of North Derry, South Derry accent.
It's hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is difficult.
Yeah. O'Neill's more difficult because he has refined his accent slightly over time.
Yeah, he has, hasn't he?
Whereas, I'd say Roy Keane's and he's an easy one, is he, to do?
Well, of course, you talk like that. You know. You talk about some of the standards of the players, you know, the way they're playing, you know, the crappy United players, they're not good enough. And that's a problem with them, you know, they're on their TikToks and their Instagrams, you know, taking selfies, you know, it's not good enough. You look at the Sancho lad, he's playing Call of Duty online, he's playing at Dortmund. It was well documented. He was showing up late to training all the time. You know.
Do you find it? Like, is Keane becoming easier or harder to do because he's so ubiquitous now.
He's
like,
mellowed.
Yeah, and he's mellowed. Like, he was just this monster. And I spent so much time around Keane. And actually, I heard him talking on his podcast about one of the days they were talking about lateness and people being late on the podcast. And he was talking about when they left. He left 3 players behind. When he was Sunderland manager, they were playing a match in Barnsley, and I was at that match.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to an English reporter, because it was a big story, he left 3 players, including Anthony Stokes, the Irish player, behind.
Okay, yeah.
Just didn't bring them because they were late for the coach and they just went off to the match. And then Keane came in. Sunderland won. It was when his first year as manager at Sunderland. It was
when they were in the championship.
In the championship. And it was hysteria. Like, it was Keane worship. It was Keane mania.
Oh, it was, yeah.
There was 8,000 fans came down. They were dancing on the dugout. There was just madness. Everyone thought Keane was going to be the next great manager. And he came in, and it was in Barnsley, and he came into this tiny little press room. I had just said to this English reporter, oh, you know, it's funny Keane didn't wait for them, because, you know, he was late for a couple of buses himself when he was a player. You know, the famous story with Mick when he was an Ireland man. I don't think it's true, but he's supposed to have said, Mick said, you know, he got on the bus with a hangover. Keane got on the bus with a hangover. Mick McCarthy said, you call yourself a professional. And Keane is supposed to have said, which he didn't, do you call what you have a first touch? You know, that was as his response. Anyway, so I said this to him, I know he's missed a couple of buses himself in his career. And the guy, just Keane, came in and he sat down, and the guy said, you know, what happened there, Roy? And he said, yeah, well, you know, they were late. You know, we don't wait for anyone. And the guy went, somebody said you've missed a couple of buses yourself. And Keane just, it was just like, it was a movie. It was just like a zoom in, like, eyes narrowed. You calling me a hypocrite? And he spent about 5 minutes toying with him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just going round and getting him, like, what are you saying? And like, no, I'm,
yeah.
like, no, I'm not.
Like the famous scene in Goodfellas.
That's
so funny. What's so funny?
Go on here. Funny I amuse you, I make you laugh. You know what the funny thing is? I don't know why people enjoy these Home Alone movies. I think they're fucking shit. I really do. Where's the enjoyment? You know, as an actor, you know, an 8-year-old kid, you know, it's attempted murder. You know, you're in the on the legal side of things, and this kid should be put away. What the fuck is that all about? He sent a fucking blowtorch to my head.
Did he do Goodfellas before he did that? What a comeback.
He did it around the same year. Yeah.
But he did Goodfellas first. I mean, Goodfellas was the film that made him.
Yeah, it was essentially. It was in Raging Bull. He was fantastic in that. Yeah,
too. He had a run then. He did Goodfellas. He did.
Yeah.
He did My Cousin Vinny.
And My Cousin Vinny, he obviously the Lethal Weapon movies as well.
He was in JFK.
Oh, that's right, of course.
He was brilliant in JFK.
Yeah.
I thought he was fantastic in The Irishman. I know a lot of people.
But the problem was The Irishman was just Goodfellas. With everybody aged 40 years.
I don't know, because he played a completely different role in The Irishman compared to Goodfellas and Casino.
Yeah,
His character was stripped back a little bit. You think so?
I think everybody's going, what was it?
Huh? That's the problem. You know, we don't have cameras here, but I have to disagree with you. I really do.
It's okay, Bobby, calm down.
But the problem was we didn't have Al. You know, for Casino and Goodfellas or Raging Bull.
No, they didn't have me. And that was the problem. You know? And everybody said it to Dee.
Scorsese, he's 25 years too late. You should have been in a movie in the fucking 80s. I said I know, but I had to do it before I fucking died.
What are you going to do?
That's right. I didn't even play a gangster. I played fucking Hoffa.
But for me, the Tony Soprano.
The Pacino's a hard one.
Yeah, he's hard enough.
I remember you did a Pacino. Do you remember when you did? You were doing. It was so funny because you were doing somebody. You want to play some checkers? Do you remember that?
Was that in Nice?
I can't remember what you were doing. You know, you want to play some checkers? What are you going to do?
I think it was something I do. I remember checkers. Yeah, checkers. Because I haven't got the fucking brain capacity to play chess.
But that was a gig a couple of years ago in Nice with me, you, Conor Moore, Marty Morrissey.
That's right. Well, it was for the kid who had...
Yes.
He had a stroke playing minor football.
Yeah.
Yeah. In 3 Mile House, isn't that it?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. What a night that was.
Yeah, it was a great night.
It was very, very funny.
Yeah.
You want to play some checkers? But he did it, you know, as in, you know, it was like Heat.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, him and De Niro. But he said instead of all that other stuff, you want to play some checkers.
But it was like Brando as well is one that I do, just the Godfather one.
He's tough.
For me, that's... And what he did was he put cotton buds on each side of his mouth to speak like that, you know, and then you kind of say, you can act like a man, you know, and that was my brand. But then I do Tony Soprano as well.
And when you do Tony Soprano, there's a lot of fucking heavy breathing out of this. So I did a video a couple of days ago. You know, it's for me, you know, I'm a kid at heart, and I play games. So that new Grand Theft Auto trailer came out. And I talked about one of the characters in the previous games, Tommy Vercetti. You know, I said, he's a saint. End of story.
And he sort of does that. Oh, he's blowing through his nose, breathing.
Oh, he's yeah. For me, in my opinion, the greatest acting performance ever in any movie, TV series was James Gandolfini as Tony Soprano.
It's the greatest series ever.
It's 100%. Yeah. Yeah. It's the greatest series ever. I've never watched a TV series that just, or a film that just sucks you in as if you know the person.
What about that guy in Breaking Bad?
Brian Cranston.
Mm. Jesus, did you see him do Lyndon B. Johnson? You know, Lyndon B. Johnson was a pig. You know, he was a big, gruff, southern. You know,
I did see that. That was a movie, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was one of the great performances too, because he's a chameleon, Cranston.
I mean, yeah.
He can play anything. I mean, I thought his range in Breaking Bad, and I have to say, start to finish.
Oh, amazing.
That was epic. I would take him ahead of Tony Soprano.
Would you?
Yeah, on that series. I mean, it was extraordinary.
Just considering what he had done. Like, he was in Malcolm in the Middle, obviously, for 7 seasons as well. Yeah.
You could have put somebody else in to be Tony Soprano, who would have done a good job.
Yeah.
Very difficult to see how anyone else would have been able to achieve what Cranston achieved in
Breaking Bad.
He was
phenomenal.
Hair-raising.
As well, and we talk about the best series ever. I think the best ever season of a TV show I've ever watched was True Detective Season 1.
With
McConaughey and Woody Harrelson.
Mm, yeah, well,
and that will segue into, obviously, me doing McConaughey.
Those guys are top of the line as well.
They're fantastic.
Yeah.
Woody Harrelson's one of the obscure impressions that I do.
Cool.
But when you're doing them, you have to talk like that, and it's, you know, it's very slow, but it is what it is. And you do the laugh and all that, but it's great. And I work with Matthew. I mean, he's practically my brother at this point. There's a rumor that apparently they are brothers, by the way. Look that up after the recording.
But of course, when you're doing Woody, you have to talk like that, and it's all good. Well, he's a friend of mine, and, you know, that's it. We have an all right time when we're on set. We're actors. At the end of the day, we're brothers, too. That's important.
if you close your eyes there, that's it.
Yeah.
McConaughey.
Yeah. Do some more McConaughey there. That's extraordinary.
Well, McConaughey, of course. Well, it's great to be here on the Free State Podcast.
Oh, my God.
We're having a good time. See, we're recording a podcast. We're in a room. There's not many people. There's just 3 people in this room. So it's good for me to do this impression. If I'm doing it at a live setting, it can be difficult because people are talking too much.
You need the intimacy.
But for example, one impression that will grab people if I'm in a room is Eddie Murphy. So when you talk like that, you know, and it's great. And you can rage, you know, you can shout at Eddie Murphy, you can do what you like, you know, and it's all good. But I do the happy Eddie Murphy, you know what I mean? The happy Eddie Murphy that was, you know, making all those kids movies in the 1990s, you know, and all that shit. It was great.
Trading Places.
Trading Places and all that, yeah.
Can I help you, officer? Who's pretending he's a Vietnam veteran with no legs? Can I help you, officer? What a great movie that was.
Oh, brilliant movie.
And genuinely, they do not make movies like that anymore.
No.
Trading Places. Oh.
Yeah.
Trading Places. Even like the
Pork bellies.
Yeah. But even the Farrelly Brothers movies, like, you know, the likes of Dumb and Dumber, There's Something About Mary, Kingpin, those movies in particular, those comedies would not get made today.
Yeah.
No.
They're too over the line, I suppose, that politically.
Way too over. There's Something About Mary in particular. You know,
yeah,
but it is funny stuff.
The
kid
don't touch his ears.
That just would not fly.
Yeah, and you probably couldn't make a movie making fun of schizophrenia either nowadays.
No. Oh, me, myself, and Irene. Yeah, you can't do that either. You know.
Yeah. It's a world I want. I want no part of.
it was a free for all back then.
You mentioned, you know, like the way you and Conor Moore have your career in social media.
Yeah.
and talked about Oliver Callan and Mario. Like, it's the opportunity now that, like, you know, so many of your impressions are global stars. Like, is that the thing that is kind of another thing that's an advantage you have? You don't have to do, you're not limited to just Irish impressions, or the market, or the, you know, the global reach for those big impressions of international stars is yeah. even greater.
Yeah, and you know, that's the whole kind of the pull of social media in a sense. Yeah. You know, you do those global stars, you know, you do actors, you do, you know, global stars, like boxers that I do, football yeah. players. You know, you look at Connery, he's doing some of the best golfers in the world, the best Formula One drivers in the world.
Yeah.
He's kind of creating these niche markets yeah. in yeah. doing the Formula One impressions.
And one retweet to 10 million followers, boom.
Boom. That's all it takes.
Yeah.
Like I did, TikTok, I think it's a bit of a toxic platform, but I've got to be on that platform. Yeah. And you know, your following builds up quickly on a platform like that. And I posted a video the other day, you know, celebrities previewing the Grand Theft Auto 6 trailer. But I have 1.3 million views in a couple of days because of that. You know, and unfortunately, it's sad, but numbers are a big thing.
Well, it is, but I do, like, some of your impressions are the best I've ever heard.
Thank
no, I mean that yeah, sincerely. No. I mean, they're uncanny. What do you call the lad you do? He's in all the same, you know, he's a sort of a black acting icon. And
Denzel
Washington, mm. yeah.
That's right, when you're talking like that, it's okay. You know, when you... My thing is, he got older. You know, you watch those Equalizer movies, that's right. It's like, very good movies. And he's very relaxed. And then he breaks into a laugh. Yeah, that's right. Okay. That's right. We told, you know, I don't have to play any character. I don't have to be a method actor. I don't have to put on an accent. People just hear me talk. They see what I do. But I like, yeah, you know, characters like that, Denzel. You know, they're very impressionable.
But it's just sort of, well. is it that you're attracted to the character and you then say, or is it you think, oh, I can do that one? Or is it just,
yeah,
or is
absolutely.
It more like
it's the inflection, you know, you find that inflection in the voice.
So give us a for instance.
Well, for Denzel.
Yeah.
So when he's acting, he kind of, you know, when he's talking like that, and he's very serious, you know, his bottom lip is kind of like that. That's right. Okay. Okay. I'm talking to you right now when we having a conversation. But out of nowhere, he can laugh, right? And then you see, that's right. You know, he shows off his whole face structure changes. But it can go like that in a second.
It's so funny the way that you're morphing into his face with that. Do that.
Here's an example. Now, Michael Keaton, right? One of the obscure ones that I do.
Michael
Keaton.
What a superb. Did you see...
Brilliant actor.
Did you see Dopesick?
Oh, amazing.
I mean, it was... That was...
He was incredible.
One of the most terrifying things I've ever seen about yeah. the excesses of American capitalism.
Yeah, and what, 100%.
I mean, just to essentially legalize drug dealing
yeah.
on an enormous legal scale.
Yeah.
With all of
that, the essentially got swept under the carpet, like
extraordinary. And when they prosecuted them, you know who they brought in to prosecute them?
Who?
A senior prosecutor from New York, whose entire practice was based on prosecuting mafia wow. gangs. Jeez. That's who they brought in because of the striking similarities.
Yeah,
the capo regimes, right down to the sellers on the ground.
My God,
you know who had. Essentially turned the doctors, they were bribing the doctors.
Yeah.
Often the doctors were taking the
drugs
themselves.
Oh, the doctors
the
became
themselves.
Addicted, yeah.
You know, and, but anyway, so you were talking about...
But for that's a, like, so when you're doing Michael Keaton, hey, you're talking like that, okay. But then you get a bit, like, crazy, you know? You get it, you know, you like Batman, you get a bit nuts, okay. Yeah. You gotta get the Beetlejuice first, okay. But you're kind of like that, okay. It's all right, it's okay, it's good.
It's the facial tics and all yes. that sort of yeah. you just go with it yeah.
But you say that that's an obscure one, or like, what is a sweet spot when you've got somebody you love doing, you do really well, like you mentioned Van Hal, like when United were going badly, but he was front and center for all of that.
Oh, he was great.
Like, do you want people to hang around? Like, do you, Trump is the obvious one because there's no one in American politics that is as I can't think of anyone you could do that would be as funny as your Trump.
You can't really match that impression. All the impressionists do Trump. I know there's a couple of Biden impressions going around. You know, there's a few, and I do Biden as well.
Yeah,
but it's not to the same effect.
He's difficult to do. The thing about Trump is that you don't have to make up any jokes. You can just look at anything that he says.
Well, that's it, and you can do anything with it, really.
Because Trump
and he knows everything. Trump knows everything. Nobody knows things like I know things. absolutely everything. You know, this packet of Haribo Supermix, which you're obsessed with, Dion. Nobody knows more about Haribo Supermix than me. Really fantastic, you know? I noticed you ate all the jelly babies in it.
It's unbelievable. He has no off switch. And he would eat, he'd clean out the minibar, he'd eat all the sweets until he started to feel ill. That's true.
Have you got a sweet tooth? I'm the same.
Well, no, it's not a sweet tooth. He doesn't drink anymore.
Okay.
So he's got.
But I do have a sweet tooth as well.
But you've no off switch. Says that. I'm not.
You can't.
I'll just keep going until.
My mother was.
And would you actually feel?
I feel sick now. Yeah.
Yeah, because you had.
My
all
mom's
the
very like that.
But I'm like, why am I feeling so sick?
My mom.
Do it all the time.
My mom loves all the swizzles sweets. The love hearts and the Parma violets and all them. She's obsessed with them, and she get a bag of them and she'll.
My wife says I like granny sweets, you know, I'll get like Murray mints.
Oh, Murray, the orange barleys as well. Yeah. My granddad used to have them. Yeah. And then he'd get away from them, get away. That's what he used to say to me. That's my Cork accent. I should have a better Cork accent with Cork blood in me.
Do you do Jack Nicholson?
Yeah, I can.
He's a
brilliant. When you're doing Jack, you have to talk like that. And you have to breathe in. You have to. Everything has to be an exclamation. I love Jack. I mean, as good as it gets, you know.
Oh, what a film.
What a film. What a character, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, one of only two people who had a tunnel dug from their mansions in Bel Air under the ground into the Bunny Mansion.
Near jail, wow.
Who's the other person?
Apparently a man of, Crook Douglas, apparently a man of prodigious appetite.
Jack Nicholson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He liked
Wendy,
to watch,
you just don't.
Gotta watch those Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, but you were talking about other boxers that you've been working on.
Yeah. Eubank is one that I've been doing for years, but everyone does Eubank.
Yeah.
But when I...
Is he easy to do?
No, not particularly. But I think when I do Chris Eubank, and especially when I do it in a live setting, obviously, you know, the topic of conversation, and in Ireland, the topic of conversation is Steve Collins, my former opponent, but when I'm doing the gigs in the UK, it is my son, who I believe has failed to live up to my legacy. And I also believe that he has failed, you know, to live up to be the Simba to my Mufasa.
Like, it is amazing because if you're listening to this, you will just hear Chris Eubank and think you're getting the perfect impression. But actually, it is, when you look at you, you just embody it. You body him too. It is, strangely, it's like looking at him.
And it's the very, because I think that he has come to education late and read a lot.
Yeah.
So he hasn't heard all these conversations. He hasn't gone through a university setting where he's heard all these conversations. He picks his way very eccentrically through words.
Guys, I did a show with Chris Eubank in Cardiff and he was very normal. Honestly.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're an impressionist. Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. Yeah, that's great. I have a lot of friends who are impressionists. That's really good. Yeah. You're doing it long? Yeah, normal. It's not this slow kind of thing. So essentially, he is living the gimmick.
Yeah.
Right.
With the monocle and the...
All of that.
but very normal, very down to earth with me.
he was another tough guy.
A very tough guy.
I mean, he was proper. And that's the most ferocious of all the divisions, that super middleweight.
Oh, my God. Because
you're almost at heavyweight. You've got a classic mix of endurance, athleticism, speed, power.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a pig of a division.
And it is.
He went through that division until Collins' boy spooked him.
Yeah, he did.
Tony Quinn pretended that he had hypnotized Stevie.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
And that Chris's head would be 3 times the normal size. Yeah. And he told the world that. We had Roddy, and it was very funny talking about that, you know.
Yeah.
Roddy going into the lift in it was Jury's Hotel after the weigh-in. Or the one out there where they used to do the All-Stars all the time. That one.
Yeah,
Roddy's a
Burlington,
character.
Burlington.
The Burlington, he said he went to and he could hear Eubanks saying, you can say this, you know. Let's get out of here. This is not right. I shouldn't have to fight this man. This is supernatural.
It was supernatural, and I can tell you that much. And that is why I have, over the years, developed a great respect for the Fighting Irish. Because that is not just the saying. It is quite supernatural. It is in the air at times. It is. There is something so special about it.
I wondered after he almost killed Michael Watson.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, Eubank had such a black heart. I mean, he was gone. Watson was a brilliant, brilliant boxer. Had boxed him brilliantly for maybe 10 rounds, 11 rounds. And halfway through the 10th or the 11th, Eubank eventually, I think for the first time in his career, succumbed and went down in the canvas. I mean, the fight was over. Yeah. And as he got up, he threw a huge sort of supernatural one punch, which connected with, I mean, it was one last desperate attempt that came out of that black soul of his. And Watson went down and didn't get up.
Yeah.
And really didn't get up for, he was in hospital for 6-9 months, intensive care. And I think probably watching the Collins fights, and I know he was definitely spooked, he said himself he was spooked, and that he shouldn't have fought, and he didn't think he should have been put through that. But I think that after that, Eubank was punch shy, he didn't want to. You know, it must be an awful experience for him, because he's also clearly sensitive and empathetic man.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you know, there's a massive human element to these boxers. Having met so many boxers over the years, they are the most approachable people. You know, with regards to having this global fame, they're very easy, very down to earth. And I think it's because of the gyms that they're training in, the trainers instilling, you know, discipline and manners. It's essentially, you know, they're essentially in another home when they're in that gym. And, some of the trainers, you got to give them props for, you know, developing these fighters and essentially, you know, developing them as characters and as humans as well.
Might it also be that they're that in that world of fighting, when you're immersed in it and you're training towards big fights and everything goes on the line, your health, your life, everything goes on.
Yeah.
That you're stripped right down to the bare soul, you know. It's the most searching examination of a human being, I think.
Yeah.
Getting into a ring. And maybe there's something about when you're living in that world and you're stripped back down and all the bullshit is taken away from your life and there are no distractions, you know, that you really learn who you are and you appreciate that and other people, then you develop a...
Well, you have no choice but to be a caged animal.
And it's not a posh world. You know, so you're not... I mean, I know that you can get sort of... You know, you get the odd exceptions, the Floyd Mayweathers, you know, who never really was hit and who was, I mean, like probably the greatest pound for a pound boxer that ever boxed. You know, I mean, he was ethereal. He wasn't a real, genuinely didn't even look like a real human being in the ring. I mean, he could beat up anybody and it didn't really matter. I mean,
just watch the fight against Canelo.
Canelo, I was just going to say that. I mean, when he stood right in front of him and everybody said, oh, he's in trouble now. This guy, this big guy's bigger, stronger, he's a knockout merchant. And I mean, he... To use an old dairy phrase, he beat the lugs off him. Yeah. And actually, Canelo's face got so red and purple and he got so angry.
Yeah.
And eventually, when he couldn't translate his anger into hitting Mayweather and just kept getting peppered,
yeah,
eventually he just quit. He just gave up.
He just gave up, yeah. That's, I mean, the thing with Mayweather.
But Mayweather is not, I think, in that camp of people who are approachable. I think he lives that very unusual, extravagant life of...
Yeah, well, I did a show a few years ago in Birmingham with Mayweather. I was on before him. And the hotel we were staying in, and I think it was at Radisson in Birmingham, this 9-year-old kid approached him and he told the security to tell the kid to go away. And I just thought, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the kind of person you are. And I think it's a shame someone so talented, a rare gem of an athlete that you probably will never see the likes of again.
Yeah.
And a young kid, all excited seeing someone like that, you know, turned away. I just hate seeing.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
That. Yeah. And it's, but that's the, I think that's the modern world that we live in with regards to some of these athletes, especially footballers.
But it was such a funny thing with Mayweather. I mean, like, in watching him coming up, through the ranks. I mean, he came up about 4 weight divisions, as you know.
Yeah.
And when he was world champion, you know, down in the lighter weights, I remember there was a fight. I mean, it was a fight of two unbeaten world champions. I'm trying to think who it was that he fought, but about the seventh round, he came to, I mean, he was destroying his opponent, and he came to the sitting stool, and he said to his dad, "Oh, daddy, my hand hurts so bad. My hand hurts so bad."
Mm.
And it was like a small child talking to his father.
Yeah,
you know. And then you've got this persona out of the ring of the money and throwing the money about and the Rolls Royces and all of that. And I'd sort of hoped that maybe that wasn't real, but what you're saying. He's stuck now in this. It's a bit like Conor McGregor. He's sort of stuck in this now persona. That
They become the, you know, the gimmick.
The caricature, become the gimmick. Yeah,
yeah, they do.
What was he like, Mayweather, to meet, to talk to, or to?
He, not approachable whatsoever.
Really,
no. And not approachable at
not
all.
Not interested in other people. Just
no.
Just
whereas,
very narcissistic.
Isn't
it funny that...
Whereas Brilliant, who were Brilliant, you going
to say? Naz, Prince Nassim.
Oh.
I had a long conversation with him. And if you remember Naz in the 90s, he had this attitude, this brash attitude. And you look back, like, it's revisionism now. You think, oh, he was something else. You know, but people were like, at the time, like, oh, he's too cocky, he's this, he's that. But he was amazing.
But he was spectacularly exciting.
But he,
I mean, he was spectacular.
Unbelievable. And he was speaking to me.
He fought Kevin Kelly in New York. And
oh.
I mean, it was just...
he just had an aura as well.
And he had dynamite in both hands.
Yeah, 100%.
He said that after he fought Wayne McCullough from Belfast. Yeah. You know, Wayne, you know, I really believe we'll be world champion again. You know, he's 59. Okay. I really do believe we'll be world champion again. You know, Cheryl thinks we'll be world champion too. But Wayne had, you know, it was a legend in boxing in the North and a great lad, a brilliant lad. Mm. He refused to go to the reception in Belfast City Hall that the Northern Ireland Assembly put on for him.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't invite Michael Caruth. And Wayne had been a guest of honour at Michael Caruth's celebration in the City Hall in Dublin. Obviously, at that stage, bigotry was still rampant.
And they didn't invite Michael Caruth.
So Wayne wouldn't go. I mean, Wayne's a Shankill boy.
Yeah.
But he was famous for his hard head. Mm. He was never down. And Nassim Hamed, he fought Nassim Hamed. He would just overwhelm opponents, you know, with like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of punches. And Nassim Hamed, who was such an accurate puncher.
Yeah.
And Wayne was a sitting duck as a target, like.
Yeah.
And he bombarded him. It was like missile strike after missile strike. And Wayne did not show any apparent effects to the punches. Yeah. And Nassim Hamed said, he was being interviewed about 2 weeks later, he says, I've had my hands in a bucket of ice for 2 weeks, he said.
But, it, like,
did I you do Naz?
Just by speaking to because I did that a gig a few weeks ago, and his son was present at the gig. He said, you know, I was saying to my son, I said, Adam, look at him. Look at him. Look at what he's doing. His son is an upcoming boxer. What's he going to learn from an impressionist? Look at this skill. Look at this skill. He's been doing this years. He's studying for such a long time. And it was just like, but he like just was bombarding me, not with missile punches, but with praises. I couldn't believe it. I was like, what is this?
He was one of the most, the most curious finale I think I've ever seen in boxing.
Mm.
That this guy who was unbeaten, who was knocking everybody out, who was so unorthodox,
and
he only really needed a bit of basic coaching and come back to basics a bit.
Yeah.
He fights Marco Antonio Barrera in the super fight.
Yeah, what a fight.
He loses on points because he refuses to put his hands up and defend himself, and this is one of the great fighters.
Mm.
And then he never fights again.
You know, I know.
It was such a blow to his ego that he couldn't cope with it.
Yeah.
And then...
Crazy, isn't it?
He ate obsessively.
Mm.
Put on 5-6 stone.
Yeah.
You know, and yet seems to be perfectly happy in his own skin now.
I think he is. His son is obviously... I think he had his first professional fight.
Mm.
He seems to be doing well and he's training his son. And I think that gives you a bit of, you know, get up and go, I suppose, if you're seeing...
Yeah.
So I think he was reluctant as well for his son to go into that world.
Yeah.
I think most boxers are.
Well, I mean, the prince really took no punishment at all during
none at all. No,
you know, he was knocked over a few times, but that's because of the way he fought. You would have thought the way he bounced about that he was on a bouncy castle.
Yeah.
Do you know when he was stretching back? You know that game where you put a piece of plastic on the ground and it's got circles and square, and then you put your hand on
and
then you say, I mean, that's what he was like. He could go right back almost like elastic, so that the back of his head almost touched the ring apron, and then he was back up again.
He was amazing,
bouncing back
and
forwards.
Yeah, he's just one of these boxers that just mind-blowingly brilliant. You know,
you said there about, you know, talk about Mayweather, and you said the Premier League footballers is a bit of that sort of accessibility thing now as well. Is that
100%? Yeah, you can't get access to them at all. And then, like, I've obviously do the shows with the ex-players.
Yeah,
and they're so accessible. You know, the ex-players from the 80s and the 90s.
Who do you do them with?
I've done a couple with Harry Redknapp. Yeah, fantastic. You know, you talk like that. You know, and Harry's absolutely brilliant. You know, he's a great guy. You know, I mean, he's got a story every 2 minutes about, you know, Brian Clough. You know, all the fantastic, you know, players he used to play with. You know, there's some brilliant stories there. But I've done ex-player Andy Cole. I've done a lot of work with Andy Cole. You know, Andy's a lovely fella as well.
He's a great striker.
Great striker. Him in York, unbelievable. You know.
I was looking at the goal that came up on his Twitter feed the other day, the goal they scored in the Nou Camp. That Cole scored with the 1-2.
The 1-2 between him and York?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. And step over.
Such an intrinsic partnership.
I remember that.
Amazing, they were.
Those teams were electrifying.
Unbelievable. And they played the classic 4-4-2, which you never seen.
Is there a link between, because what you do, like you, if you think of that team of Ferguson, there's so much personality in it, even from an impressionist point of view.
Yeah.
Like Ferguson Keane.
Oh, Ferguson Keane, Beckham. I know, I said Beckham was, but it's David Beckham essentially. And then you have, you know, players like Rooney later on, you know, even Solskjaer, you know, so he kind of became a bit of a character when he started managing.
You know, and he talked like that, fantastic, of course. I have to say, I think I did a pretty good job.
But when I do Ten Hag as well,
you know, you don't know what to do with Ten Hag. So these are big problems. We have Sancho, who's a big problem for discipline. So we don't know what to do. But Klopp, even Klopp as well, like, I don't know what's happened to Klopp. He's the most agitated man in the world.
I can understand where he's coming from with his complaints about the 12:30 kickoffs.
But I'll vote for sure. Everything, if you say one thing out of turn, you know, it's a big problem for me. I'll vote sure. If that's your opinion, that's your opinion. You don't have a clue what you're talking about. I'm the one who knows what I'm talking about.
But Pep as well. And with Pep, I kind of think he's like a human calculator.
You know, of course, the way he thinks, the way he does about tactics, the way he wants his players to perform for him. Okay, so good, so good. But a new one that I've learned as well is Arteta.
So when you do Arteta, it's very like that. It's a bit more robotic. The team has to have more belief. We have to get some of the bad eggs out, like Aubameyang. And then Aubameyang was a player who performed for Unai Emery, who seems to be flying with Villa.
And then, of course, when you do Unai Emery... for us, it's a very, very, very good team at Aston Villa. We are doing so well. You know, maybe we might challenge for the title. Who knows?
Do you think someone like Emery, like, because he is...
underappreciated.
But he's also more comic, like, even when you do him. Like, he's like... Is that making...
Did you notice I didn't say a certain good?
You did. But that ruined him at Arsenal.
It ruined him, yeah.
The good evening thing just
the good,
ruined him.
Good evening, yeah.
Because that was how he came after Wenger.
Yeah.
And Wenger was, you know, I know, okay, the last 10 years of Wenger were terrible, but he still had this authority.
He still, yeah.
And suddenly you had this guy who was being kind of mocked and mimicked.
Yeah.
So it shows you, like, again, there's a kind of line between what you're
doing.
There's
a lot of bad apples in that Arsenal team as well. Yeah, yeah. You know, there really was at that time. And
but if somebody crosses that line, in your impressions, even between somebody who you can kind of, you know, Klopp is funny, Guardiola is funny for like the obsessiveness, but Emery is more of a kind of,
there's a caricature element to it. Yeah, there is.
What's your favourite one at the minute?
Just in general.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a really interesting one. I mean, I don't know.
When you're sitting in the car, you're in a good mood. You know what? Would you do impressions all the time when you're in the car?
Any time I learn a new one, I get excited. So that becomes my favourite. Hmm. So it's, I never have a favourite on stage would be maybe an Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy's great on stage because you know, that impression has a bit of energy about it. Joe Pesci as well. But any time I nail down a new one, I'm so excited. This is brilliant. I can't wait to showcase this. You know, and some, like, listen, there's some that I try that I kind of haven't, I do put them in maybe one or two videos and I don't go back to them again. Like I did Harrison Ford.
And when I did Harrison Ford, I talked very like that. And everything was very, very bland. That's how he speaks.
Well, look, we want to thank you so much for calling in. Maybe you would see us out with some Eamon Dunphy, which is, I think, the greatest. You are. No one should even try to do Eamon Dunphy after you.
Well, it's a real shame that he's not an RT. The two of us, and I've said that at the start, you know. And I like to get emotional about things. The honesty that we spoke about in our analysis, our punditry, people loved us for that, you know. As Al Foran's mother likes to say, honesty is the best policy, pet.
Thanks so much for coming in, Al.
My pleasure.
The great Al Foran. Thank you so much, brother.
And now, a holiday message from Donald Trump.
It's Christmas, and I'm not afraid to say it, folks. It's Christmas, isn't it? So many great things. Santa, Home Alone 2, the best one. And baby Jesus, but not the parents. Joseph and Mary, not great. Not the kind of people you want coming to Bethlehem. They're illegals crossing the border to have an anchor, baby. Nowhere to stay, not even his baby. It's a disaster. And everyone says the innkeeper was a terrible guy because he didn't give him a room. But I think, and a lot of people are saying this, the top people, quite frankly, that he's the true hero of Christmas. He really is. He has an inn. Peak holiday season is very full. It's very booked. And I've owned some very successful hotels, the biggest. And I know what it's like. And let me tell you, these people, they come in. And Joseph, not a very good carpenter from what I'm hearing. And his wife, the Virgin Mary, not that hot, let's be honest. Maybe a 6, a Bethlehem 9, they call it. They come in there pregnant looking for a place to stay, and everybody says he's a bad innkeeper because he had no room. But what does he do? Peak season, he says, you can stay in the manger, size of a junior suite, very warm from the animals. And he's risking a health violation, to be honest, but he's a tremendous guy. So this year, let's remember the innkeepers who kept the inns. They say keep Christ in Christmas, but let's keep the in Christmas, in keep Christ in Christmas. And at Mar-a-Lago this holiday season, if you're pregnant and it's not your partner's child, you can stay one night in a junior suite for the price of a deluxe king. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas. I said it, I really did.